Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 305 of the podcast. It is the 21st of January, 2017, as I record this after a freezing walk around Bath this morning. It was, it still is, -3 and sunny, beautiful, but I am definitely looking forward to heading to New Zealand in 10 days' time for high summer. We're doing New Zealand and Australia, and my husband's family is Kiwi. And then we've got friends and family in Australia. So a family trip, and we'll be working from down under. And but I will definitely be posting some lovely pictures on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all those things. Okay, so today I have an interview with John Lee Dumas, and we're talking all about his mastery journal and specific details around how to do premium printed journal products. And we're talking about outsourcing to China and doing a massive print run. Although technically I think John's book is more of a workbook, as you answer specific questions to work towards a specific goal. And I have John's Freedom Journal from the year before, which he did a $400,000 launch on Kickstarter, and which is pretty amazing. He also makes six figures a month. He podcasts daily, and he reports his income streams on eofire.com. And John's one of those impressive guys. He's ex-military, so I ask him about discipline and getting things done, because he definitely works hard. I can't imagine podcasting every day. His shows are shorter and they are entirely interview based, but really very interesting business model. You will also laugh at my British reserve compared to his American exuberance. and I was actually on his show, Entrepreneur on Fire, a while back, and he has this phrase, "Are you ready to ignite?" And I'm kind of like, yeah, okay. So it's a fun show, and you will enjoy our conversation. I certainly found it very interesting. And you can check out the Mastery Journal at themasteryjournal.com, a hardcover journal that will guide you in mastering productivity, discipline, and focus in 100 days. But first, in publishing news this week, there is lots to talk about, because it was Digital Book World last week, which is definitely a digital focused conference. And you can find the tweets at hashtag DBW17. And there's some really interesting insights. So I recommend that. I retweeted a number of things that I found interesting. Data Guy from authorearnings.com presented at DBW and posted the slides on authorearnings.com. Definitely worth having a look. They are quite heavy, and I did mention some of the stats last week, but some of the interesting things I didn't mention last week, the particular shift is into, yes, print sales have gone up, but the big shift is that 69% of all US book purchases were online in 2016. And Amazon sells 42% of traditionally published print books in the US. So very much the focus on the switch between brick and mortar versus online purchases, even of print. So worry less about getting print into bookstores, and have your books available online in print as well as ebook, and you will be competitive. The sales of print in Barnes & Noble and Walmart have shrunk as Amazon's have grown. So this is where the kind of focus is brick and mortar versus online. Of course, Amazon's building more, opening more brick and mortar stores. So very interesting The other thing, since I announced the small press, curl up press, that we've just launched, and that I've moved into extended distribution print for print on Ingram. But for the last, and people have emailed me and said, well, do I need an ISBN? And of course, my answer is still as it has been for years, which is no, you don't need an ISBN if your focus is not this extended distribution with print. And Author Earnings Data Guy said, 24% of all ebook sales in the US, which accounts for about 550 million per year, is spent on ebooks without ISBNs. So you definitely can make a good living as an indie author without owning your own ISBNs. You don't need a small press. This is just a switch for me, or not really a switch. What will be interesting is in a year's time, so January 2018, how my own print sales will have changed, because they've been 5% of my book earnings for the last few years. So will I grow my percentage earnings with print through going through Ingram? And how much does that affect my personal bottom line? So interesting. He also goes into genre specifics, noting that indie authors can sell well competitively in any genre and are particularly doing well in those genres underserved by traditional publishing. So, some niche industry. And he, I would go and check the slides because they're really interesting. And there's so many, I can't tell you everything. Just go and have a look on authorearnings.com. But one of the interesting things was African American fiction is 71% indie published, because that is a group who are not very well served with traditional publishing. And if you go back to the interview I did with Tololope Popula about the supposed black narrative that is expected within publishing for African American or black British or just black in general, I think that this is really interesting. So it's an underserved market. And so if you are African American, black British, black of any kind, then publishing indie looks to be a really good thing, because that is an underserved genre. So really interesting. And as I've talked about before, my family is of different races. So this is something I particularly care about. Going beyond the US, indie author sales are now 20 to 25% of ebook sales in international markets. Obviously, that's going to vary by country. That's interesting. There was also a lot of excitement over audiobooks, with various agents saying audio will be the digital platform for books in 2017. Agents are pre-selling audiobook rights. Penguin Random House saying they market audiobooks to knitters and runners training for marathons, which is quite interesting, because you could target those types of people on Facebook, for example. So maybe particularly if you have some cozy mysteries, perhaps market those to some knitters. But really interesting. And certainly I listen to audiobooks when I'm doing some of my longer walks. Another big book trend is books on comfort and peace, which you would expect given the political situation in the world at the moment. Big news on audiobooks as well is that Apple, I just saw on The Verge this week, Apple and Amazon have had to end their decade-long audiobook exclusivity deal because regulators announced the deal was limiting competition. So up until recently, up until this week, if you publish your ACX, you were going to get the exclusive distribution into the iTunes store. But now that exclusivity agreement is over, it means that other retailers and other audiobook distribution mechanisms are going to open up. So this is a big deal. I think audio, as I've said many times, audio is going to be really big this year. So I'm looking forward to how that makes a difference. There's some interesting things from Wattpad, the lovely Ashley Gardner, who's been on the show before. One particular thing I picked up was that Wattpad rising trends include puppet horror and dark mermaid. I quite like the idea of dark mermaid. Quite attracted to dark mermaid books. But and also that Wattpad is has a massive growth in Spanish language. Now, remember that the age group of Wattpad readers are skew younger, so YA, but of course those people will grow up. So, and I mean, for example, the rise of popularity because with Stranger Things is that nostalgia for older stuff, the reboot of It by Stephen King. These are things that appeal to the older age group, I think 30s, 40s, but the younger age group are going to grow up, people. So this is why sometimes being an indie author is awesome. If you write a puppet horror book now that does well on Wattpad, it could come around again in 20 years time. I love that idea. A couple of other things. There was a report on some genre fiction trends and what makes a difference with data in selling genre fiction. And the key influences are the author name and is it a series? And I've heard this a number of times. The International Thriller Writers also put this out a couple of years ago that it takes 3.5 books, so between 3 and 4 books, obviously, for a reader to learn the name of the author and go back to that author and buy more books. So many of the books that hit the lists are, you know, people don't necessarily read them again. If you have a series or if you have a lot of books and a reader comes to recognize your name, that will drive people buying those books. So interesting. Also, a great quote from John Sargent, the CEO of Macmillan, one of the very large traditional publishers, quote, "We've pissed away millions of dollars over the years on ads on the back page of the New York Times to sell 8 more books," end quote. And that's not 8 times more books, that's 8 more books. So essentially saying that traditional paid media ads for books are not effective. And there was a big discussion on the focus on using data to sell. And yes, publishers are using Facebook ads, they're using BookBub, they are using the tools that indie authors use, which is why I think a lot of people are now trying the Amazon ads. I've got some of those running, you know, building email lists, the things that we can do to try and stay ahead of the curve. So that's some interesting things that came out of Digital Book World. I know that's quite a lot of stuff, but as ever, you can always fast forward or listen to me on 1.5 speed. Another interesting development this week has been a leak, some kind of leak online announced by the Digital Reader that there will be a new ebook store in Windows 10. So yes, Microsoft is going to have an ebook store. Now, hopefully that'll be better than the Google Play ebook store, but there will be a Windows ebook store. And I guess the question will be whether Drafter Digital or one of the other distributors will distribute to that, or Smashwords, or, you know, any of the other companies. But that is an interesting move because it means that there is a recognition that content is a good thing to have on your devices. Otherwise, you kind of lose your purchases of content to other apps, like the Kindle app, for example, or the Kobo app. The other thing that was interesting in the public, this week was massive for publishing. There's also a ton of other things that are not quite so timely that have happened, but I'm going to mention on other shows because today is going on for ages. Pearson is to sell its stake in Penguin Random House, which is massive, actually. It's home to some of the most successful brands in books, among them 50 Shades of Grey, Jamie Oliver, Girl on the Train, and they are selling 47% share to German-owned Bertelsmann. And The Guardian reports that there are fears that the takeover by the German, well, it's not actually a takeover. Pearson decided to sell, Bertelsmann bought. This could lead to further consolidation at the publishing house, which is responsible for 1 in 4 books sold and the sale of 800 million paper, digital, and audiobooks every year. Very interesting, off the back of the figures presented at Digital Book World, that why would Pearson sell its stake in Penguin Random House if they were making loads of money from it? There you go. There's a question to put out there. So, further consolidation in these massive conglomerates in terms of publishing houses is very interesting. And again, the sort of growth of independence and many more, the fragmentation at the opposite end, I think is an interesting thing. Okay, so I'm just going to do a little personal update. Thanks again for the comments about Curl Up Press and the logo, which is a curled up cat. I've actually got some stickers here from moo.com, which I really love. I'm going to start using those on things, try and build the brand. And I've stuck one on my Mac, which is cool. And if you didn't see it at curlupress.com, which you can go and check out if you're interested, Jonathan, my husband and business partner, is doing a master's in intellectual property law. And so our bigger company goals are going to be bound up in working in broader IP projects with indie authors in particular. And we have some pretty big goals over a 5 to 10 year period. And of course, I will share those as they become reality. But as you can imagine, right now we have a lot to learn, and this is a fascinating area. So I will let you know as we learn more. Thanks also to Lee Carlin, who pointed out that there are new top level domains available, and .press is one of them. So I also now have curlup.press, as well as curluppress.com and curluppress.co.uk. So if you have a small press, check out the .press domain names, because I really like that. So curlup.press is also redirected. But thanks, Lee, for pointing that out. He very kindly said, you know, I should get that just in case we go big and then someone else buys it and tries to sell it for loads of money, etc. Thanks also to Jamie Arpin-Riki and Alexandra Amore for helping me with my tech issues this week. Glitch in the matrix. Get this, right? People in Canada and some people in Idaho and West Virginia couldn't see the images on the creativepen.com, whereas other people could and I could, and it was very weird. It took days to work out what was going on. And in fact, I don't think we do know what's going on. It wasn't the theme. It was something at the WP Engine and, you know, my hosting company, and just things were a bit crazy. And this is the problem. When tech goes bad, you have to drop everything. Like, it's never scheduled when tech goes bad. And so I wanted to tell you guys and remind you to back up everything. Now, I didn't lose anything and nothing went wrong. I just had to kind of drop what I was doing in order to sort out this technical problem. And it was very painful and we couldn't work it out. And, you know, people are emailing and tweeting going, what's wrong with your website? And I even interviewed someone in Canada, and I was kind of embarrassed because my website looked bad. So a reminder to back everything up and download your backups of your website as well to another place. Also, another good reason to do print is, of course, if things do go wrong digitally, you will always have a print book and you can always type it in again if all else goes wrong. So many reasons to back things up. This week, I've also been working on a sweet, well, I've mentioned before that I'm working on this sweet romance trilogy, which I was just producing, and now I'm co-writing with a personal friend. And no, I'm not open to pitches about publishing other authors. And I know I keep saying that, but the reason why is people keep pitching me. Like, literally, I keep getting emails now. And my friend Orna Ross said this to me. She said, as soon as you put up Curl Up Press, you're going to get pitched. And I'm like, well, it says on the website, not open. And yet still we're getting pitched. So, but anyway, so I'm working on this co-writing and it's very interesting. I've got this 100,000 word manuscript that I'm now wrangling. I'm story wrangling and I'm learning a lot, actually. I'm learning a lot about romance and that genre and how tight the writing has to be, but also the emotional side of it. This is sweet romance, so there might be a kiss, but that's about it. And it's fascinating. So I'm finding it very interesting. It's challenging me. I'm learning things and also seeing the errors that occur when you're writing your first book. And of course, we're going to do three before we publish. So we'll know what we're doing towards the end of the year. But, you know, if you are a successful sweet romance author, I would love to hear from you. Joanna@thecreativepen.com. If you have any sort of recommendations for authors to watch out for, or, you know, if you have any advice, that would be awesome. And towards the end of the year, middle of the year, probably once we get two, I'll probably publish two and have one on pre-order or something like that. But really fascinating. I am very much looking forward to getting back to my own fiction. I've had to put the map stuff on hold while I do, you know, work on this sweet romance. And Yeah, I do have a fiction next week, actually. So many things going on. End of Days is launching on the 31st of January, which is Arcane Book 9. And my pen friends, early readers, have been very enthusiastic. So I'm very pleased with that book. I like it a lot. It definitely is a dark fantasy edge, but action adventure, conspiracy thriller, blow up the world type of thing. Lots of fun. So End of Days launching 31st. Okay, so thank you all for your emails and tweets. Here is a little bit of a selection. Taryn Blackthorne sent me a lovely picture of a China tea set that she was having tea. Goal setting and discussions inspired by the creative pen and tea. Perfect Sunday afternoon. Angerad Thompson Ree said, loving your mega fangirling on the latest show with Christine Rush. Had me giggling like a crazy. Brilliant episode 2. Anka Levitcher says, I'm sorry, Anka, I've probably got your name wrong again. I'm glad to finally put a link with your small press. Just wanted to tell you the cat curl logo is awesome. Thank you so much. Jesse, such a relief to hear you two talk about the mental differences between writing nonfiction and fiction. I thought I was alone. Glad you liked that from the show with Chris Rush. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll play a word from our sponsor in a minute. That sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a massive, massive thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons Donald Allard, Tara Jade, Nikki Golding, Catherine Bradshaw-Jones, Rachel Morgan, Kelly Beam, Laura Louver, which is an awesome name, Kate McLeod, Randy Sanders, and Amy Hilligs or Hilligers. Thank you so much to all the new patrons, but also to everyone who's been supporting for much longer. And I really appreciate your support of the show. I also recorded the extra Q&A this week, so Patreon supporters got that extra 35 minutes of me answering your questions on writing, self-publishing, and book marketing. And of course, if you become a Patreon supporter, you will get all the backlist of those Q&As to download and listen to. You can get all that extra for just less than a coffee a month. So check it out at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, let's get on with the interview. But first, a word from Kobo Writing Life.
Hello, creatives. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Author Relations at Kobo. Because you're a creative pen listener, chances are you already know Kobo is a global company. But did you know that Kobo has merchandisers around the globe creating unique web store views in major global territories? Did you know that we have special features on local authors in those territories? Similarly, the top 50 bestseller lists and the category rankings on Kobo are unique. So we have about 17 different bestseller lists. And due to recent improvements on Kobo.com, you can actually see how your book is ranking in a territory other than the one you live in. So if you're looking at your book on Kobo, what you want to do is go to the very top and click on the country flag, which will probably be showing the country that you were viewing our website from. And that will bring you to a page that basically allows you to check from 18 plus different countries. So if you're an American, you can see what your book looks like in Canada. If you're in the UK, you can see what your book looks like from Australia, etc., etc., etc. This is handy because it can help show you what your currency looks like so you can take advantage of our ability to set prices in 18 different currencies. But you can also see, if you happen to be selling really, really well in those territories, just how well you're ranking there. That's just one of the improvements we've been making at Kobo. We're going to be making more. You can find more tips like this at KoboWritingLife.com. Looking forward to seeing you there. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
Today, I'm here with John Lee Dumas. Hi, John.
I'm excited to be here, Joanna. Thanks for having me. Let's rock the mic.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And just a little introduction in case people don't know John. John is the host of Entrepreneur on Fire, where he interviews successful entrepreneurs 7 days a week. He's grown EO Fire into a multi-million dollar a year business with over 1,500 interviews and 1.5 million monthly listens. And his latest project, which we're excited about today, is the Mastery Journal, Master Productivity, Discipline and Focus in 100 days. And I think you've got it there, haven't you, John?
I got it right here. Hot off the presses, literally. Woohoo! Silver embossed. Oh, it's a masterpiece.
That is awesome. And we are going to get into that because we're very interested in merchandising on this show as authors. Now, I actually have your Freedom one here, so I'm going to wave that too, you know, as a fan. But, you know, this Mastery Journal, before we get into the publishing side, it's about productivity, discipline, focus. And I know you were in the military originally. And I want to know, like, because this is something authors really struggle with. Like, we want to write, but it's hard to get in the chair. So, you know, give us some of your tips for getting things done, because, you know, you are pretty much a master at this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wasn't always a master at this. So it came through work, it came through time, it came through research. And, you know, you were very kind, you know, to wave the Freedom Journal very quickly in front of the camera. So thank you for that. Because that, to me, was my first kind of dipping of my toe into the merchandising world, like into creating an actual physical product. And it was a great experience because the idea came from people like yourself, Joanna, because all of my listeners were saying, John, what do your past guests on EO Fire all have in common? And I realized every one of my guests of EO Fire who are successful entrepreneurs, they know how to set and accomplish goals, period. They have that down. They would knock it out of the park. And my audience that was struggling with that very same thing. So I came up with the idea to create a journal to guide people through accomplishing their number one goal in 100 days. So very specific, one goal, 100 days, knock it out, crush it, get on with your life, you know, do that next thing. And so that was a huge success. It became the sixth most funded publishing campaign of all time on Kickstarter. Did over $453,000 in just 33 days in revenue. So, you know, talking about merchandising, like there is real money when you find the right product to serve to your audience that knows, likes, and trusts you. So those are some key things that we have to keep in mind when we do that. But, you know, moving forward, I realized that there's something really special about the Freedom Journal because it was about what my guests had in common. But like, what are my greatest strengths? Like, what's brought me from nothing 4 years ago when I launched EO Fire with no audience, no skill sets, no real knowledge about entrepreneurship to now here we are, you know, 4 years later, a multi-million dollar a year business, having generated over $10 million actually to date since we launched. You know, like how did I create that? Like, what are my strengths? And those three strengths, Joanne, as you mentioned, were productivity, they were discipline, they were focus. We can get into all three of those specific traits as you kind of get deeper into this interview, but I want to answer your specific question before I stop talking here. And that is, you know, like what's one thing that I see as writers really being able to use maybe the Mastery Journal or just, you know, their own heads to start that writing process, because we love to procrastinate. Excuse me, we love to procrastinate. So I love the phrase, win tomorrow today. And it's actually the last thing you do every single night with the Mastery Journal. You win tomorrow today. Because the reason why people lose, they wake up in the morning, they don't have any specific, they know they have things to do, but they're not quite sure what those things are or what order they should accomplish them. So your brain, it just goes quickly to like the escape route of, well, let's just check our email real quick. Let's just jump on Facebook real quick. That's other people's agenda, OPA. You're putting out other people's fires. You're not doing something meaningful for yourself or your business. So if you win tomorrow today by sitting down at the end of the night, writing down a task list. I call it the morning routine. You write your morning routine. Guess what happens? You wake up in the morning, you no longer have this empty void in your head about what you're going to do. You know from the night before exactly what the next 9 steps of your life are, you know, including exercise, if that's part of it, you know, if you're going to do, you know, the whole routine, whatever that might be, and you can just jump right into it. Mm-hmm. That procrastination disappears because now you're just following your preordained day.
Yeah, and I totally get that. And I'm someone who plans a lot and does that. But I think I know a lot of creative people struggle with this word discipline as well. And what you're saying is quite structured. And the word discipline often sounds quite painful. I think people think it's painful, but you clearly love what you do. You're very passionate about what you do. This is not just about money. You're helping people. And, you know, these journals are part of that too. So how do people keep the joy in discipline and focus?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I will say now that I've done a few of these interviews about the Mastery Journal, a kind of common theme has started to bubble to the surface that I actually had no idea was going to. But now you've said it. A couple of my past guests have talked about it. Like I was on Andrew Warner's Mixergy. I was talking with Dan Miller from 48 Days to the Work You Love. And they both just kind of attached like an interesting thing around the word discipline. I mean, maybe it's because I'm military. Like discipline to me has always been like important and a great thing. Like if you have discipline, you're a winner. But they've both said, you know, like, and again, it's been coming from other areas as well, is like, you know, like discipline doesn't always sound fun. Like, you know, like that's something that kind of people are in some ways maybe repelled by, and it just kind of seems scary. Like, I don't want to live a life that's disciplined or whatever that might be any way, shape or form. So how I kind of like to rephrase that is by saying like, listen, by being disciplined, you're actually giving yourself so much more freedom than you would ever have. As people who aren't disciplined, they just get pulled, tugged, and just screamed at from every direction, and they don't even know how to deal with it. So like your life is not your own when you don't have a disciplined plan of attack. So, you know, kind of going back to that morning routine, if you are willing to be disciplined, and by the word, I love the roots of the word discipline, it's disciple. So, I mean, that's kind of something to think about. Maybe if you don't like the word discipline, think about the root of the word, which is disciple. You know, that was something that Andrew Warner pulled out that I just loved. I was like, I'm stealing that because that's amazing. But if you think about it that way, say, hey, like I'm actually going to sit down, craft a plan of action that I'm then going to execute. When you do something like that, that's a disciplined plan. You're then opening up the rest of your day to do other things to give yourself freedom because you've already done what needs to happen to move your business forward, to write that chapter, you know, to do that editing, to do whatever it might be that is so important to your business that, you know, usually people just push it back to the end of the day and we have no more energy left. And we're just like, okay, now I'm going to edit that chapter. Like, really? Like after you just spent all of your brain cells doing other people's agenda, that's why you need discipline. That's why you need that plan. And that's why you need to execute on that plan.
And I mean, I think, you know, you're an entrepreneur, I'm an entrepreneur, and I think business is inherently creative because, you know, we are creating new physical things in the world. We're creating wealth, we're creating jobs, we're creating all this thing. So do you feel that everything you do is about creativity?
So creativity is actually a really important word in my life. In fact, I'm going to be writing my first traditional book coming up in 2017, and I'm using the word creative or actually create in the actual tagline because I just believe so much in that word because I think it's exciting to create. I think as humans, like when we hear the word create or creative, it kind of like gives a little warm spot in our hearts because it's just like, wow, like this is something that I get to choose to make. You know, we just love making things, whether it be physical or whether it be the written word or whether it be music, you know, whatever it might be, like we just love to create. So I think creativity is a huge part of people's lives. So you have to give yourself the structure to create something meaningful. Again, otherwise you're just like a pinball in a pinball machine. You're getting bapped around. You're not creating everything. You're just reacting. So by giving yourself a disciplined schedule that you're going to execute on, you are actually giving yourself space for creativity of the best brain cells that you have of the day. And I keep going back to that because after you hopefully have gotten your nice 8 hours of sleep, I'm a big believer in getting at least 8 hours of sleep. I mean, people that say they get 4, 5, 6, like they're headed for burnout. It's happening. Like it's just reality. But, you know, so after you get that nice 8 hours of sleep and you get up and you have that nice morning routine, whatever that might be, now you're ready. Like that's the best time of your day when you haven't yet just weighed down your brain yet with all these other things that are going on. And I'm not sure, Joanna, if you read the book Deep Work by Cal Newport.
Yeah, it's excellent.
But he uses in that book, he talks about the word residue a lot. And I think that was a really important word to kind of hone in on. Like if you just like jump into Facebook, say beginning of the day before you do anything else, and then like you move on to your creative tasks, you're taking residue with you from that, you know, social kind of nonsense time that you were on, even if you don't want to, even if it's a little bit subconscious. So just think about that, the residue that's there, and just realize the best time to do your creative work is when there's no residue.
No, I totally agree. Okay, so I want to get into the multiple streams of income idea because you do, and you actually do income reports on your site, which I'll link to in the show notes, which are amazing, approving multiple streams of income. But what I'm interested in is why did you decide to do a physical product when you make a really good living from online digital things?
Joanna, this is why your podcast is great. This is why you're great, because you ask the right questions. I mean, these are the right questions that I wish everybody would ask because they're so important. So for me, you know, I launched my business, you know, as bootstrapping. I wasn't making money for a significant amount of time, you know, like 9 months post-launch, like not a dollar came in. Then we started to slowly make some more money and start to generate some revenue. And that's when Kate and I looked at each other and said, hey, why not share exactly how we're making money so that other people can emulate our successes? And why not share with people how we're losing money and you know, making mistakes and failures so people can avoid those failures? So 39 months ago, it's been a while now, we've been doing these monthly income reports. So there's 39 of them. I know you're going to link them up, but it's over at eofire.com/income. They're all listed out right there. We've been doing these income reports to show people that, you know, that you can deliver free, valuable, consistent content, which for me is my podcast, on a daily basis. And you can generate revenue off of that. You can create a business off of that, which is so important. So we were bootstrapping. We weren't making necessarily, you know, a ton of money at the beginning. So it just made sense to create virtual products and to do things in the cloud and apps, because it's just a lower costs to get in on that, things like physical products. Like, you know, this stuff costs money to make. I mean, there's faux leather, you know, there's silver, you know, leaf edges, there's bookmarks, there's bands. I mean, there's, you know, there's written pages in here. I had designers to do this. I mean, there's the whole nine yards. And so when you first start, like, I don't think that you need to say, okay, I need to like go and do something that costs a lot of money, because, you know, you might not yet be there with your audience that's going to be there, that knows, likes, and trusts you enough yet, that's going to support you enough on that venture to make it worthwhile. You might have to grow there. So doing something like an ebook or self-publishing a book or, you know, a podcast or a course that, you know, people can access online, that's a great way to start. And that's how we started generating revenue for sure. But then, you know, fast forward 3 years later, you know, we had been generating a lot of revenue and the income was becoming very steady and we could depend on it. So I said, okay, when everybody's zigging, you know, everybody's doing this thing, which is creating ebooks or online or apps or SaaS products or virtual, whatever, which is amazing, by the way. And we still do all of that because it's great. But how can I zag with something else? How can I do something different? And that's when I said, well, listen, I can afford to write a check for $150,000 to have 30,000 of these pre-made. And I did. So, you know, that was huge. And I knew that, like, that kind of barrier was hard for people. Like, I could have, you know, just done this as a PDF. And then the next thing you know, like, you know, anybody could have just come back up and done the very similar same thing as a PDF. And now how am I differentiating? You know, now it's a price bidding war and stuff like that. So by me raising the barrier, making that physical product that is super hard to replicate, because you got to invest. Again, I wrote a check for 150K. I had to, you know, find the manufacturer. I had to find a way to logistically get it over to my distributor in the United States. I got to pay for the warehouse costs while it's waiting to be sold. All of these things. So the fact that I knew that this is going to be a differentiator for me, that this is going to be something that I could do that wasn't easily replicated, that made it to me huge. And so that's why I went the physical route. Happy to talk more about that, because I think it's a really good question and a fair question. And by the way, you don't have to start like I did by writing a check for 150K. Like, I knew that I had a very large audience that was going to support this. You know, in fact, I just wrote another check for 150K because we already need 30,000 more Freedom Journals. Like, we just ordered them to come in more. So I knew I had that audience that was there. But, you know, you can start at a lower price point, knowing, by the way, that it's going to be hard for people to replicate that, because it's laying down those railroad tracks. The logistics is difficult, but because it's difficult, that puts you above the rest.
Yeah. And I mean, we're going to come back to publishing. Obviously, most of my listeners do print through print on demand. So we're going to come back to distribution. I want to just, you know, kind of wind it back to the design, the writing process and the design process, because I see this actually, you call it a journal, which is interesting. To me, a journal is kind of more plain, whereas this is more like a workbook, as in you're meant to do some work, aren't you? It's got, well, and I've got the Freedom one, but the Mastery one is the same. It's like, you know, your thoughts are in there. There's quotes, and then there's kind of exercises for people to do. So how did you write and design it? How much did you do? How did you, you know, what did you implement this the second time around that you learned the first time around with that process?
Yeah, so that's interesting. And, you know, I actually should have probably consulted with you before going as far as I did with the Freedom Journal, because, you know, it's, you're right. Like, I don't really necessarily come from the literary world. So to me, You know, like the word the Freedom Journal just sounded great. Whereas, you know, frankly, the Freedom Workbook.
One wants to do any work.
Well, it's probably, but it's much more accurate, like you said, like accuracy level, it's much more the Freedom Workbook. But I don't think that would have sold as much as well as the Freedom Journal. I could have got into a deep story there, but I won't. But maybe we'll get to it later. Heck no, I'll do it right now. Yeah, so real quick story. Do you know a kiwi fruit?
Used to be called
Chinese gooseberries.
Yes.
They rebranded it to kiwi fruit and like sales went through the roof. Nobody wanted a Chinese gooseberry. Everybody wanted a kiwi fruit though. So long story short, the Freedom Journal was because, you know, I felt good about the name and there is a lot of journaling aspect of it, but there's definitely a lot of workbook aspect to it. But kind of back to your core question, which was like, you know, how much of it was mine? Like I will say that both the Freedom Journal and the Mastery Journal, everything, and I actually am looking for my other notebook that I have here, everything was written and designed by me. Like I'm not the designer, like finishing touches, cause I can't draw, but like I would draw what I wanted, you know, like two people climbing a mountain that I would like take a picture of it, send it to my actual designer and she would make it amazing, you know, but everything in there is me. So like from, you know, like how the days are structured, to the different portions of it, which are the daily tasks, the nightly recaps, the 10-day sprints, the quarterly reviews, all of that came from right here. Like it was just me over the course of a year researching, studying about goals and how people succeeded with them and why people failed with them. And it just slowly kind of came together into what it is now. And I've actually just published the Freedom Journal 2.0, which you know, I mentioned I just ordered another 30,000. It's the same thing as the Freedom Journal, except there are some very decent tweaks within from some great feedback, you know, from the first round of the Freedom Journal. So I'm really excited about that because, you know, everything in the Freedom Journal came from here and it wasn't 100%. It wasn't the best that it could be and it never will be. You know, all you can do is just keep improving a little bit because the feedback that I got from, you know, the current 16,000 plus people who have purchased a Freedom Journal is just out of this world. So we took that, implemented those things in the Freedom Journal 2.0 and went forward. So it's always a work in process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, there are so many ways to find a designer. And in fact, I think people now are overwhelmed by the choices of how to find a designer or an editor or whatever. So did you use your community or did you use anything specific to find your team?
I actually used my community. I think that's a great way to do it. You know, we had a woman that reached out and said, John, like, I love your stuff. You know, I'm a designer. This is what I do. She was like, frankly, I think your logo is pretty average. And, you know, here's what I would do if I was your designer. And our designer, I mean, and our logo was pretty average. You know, we had used like 99 designs, which is great. But we had used it like a couple of years ago. It was kind of getting a little dated. And what she came back with, as you can kind of see right now for the new updated logo, was just amazing. We're like, that's it. And we're like, what else do you do? And so we started giving her one-off tasks. She just kept getting better and better and better. Now we actually have her on retainer for 40 hours per month. So she is our designer for 40 hours a month. And sometimes, you know, we go over that when we have big pushes like the current thing, the Mastery Journal. So that's how we found it. But, you know, I think 99 Designs is a great place. You know, I have a lot of people who have done that and who ended up picking the winner of their logo and then ended up hiring that person individually going forward. So there's a lot of great ways to do it. And I think that, you know, 99 Designs, Elance, Virtual Staff Finder. Those are all great places to find great designers.
Okay, cool. And then, you know, you printed this in China. So this whole production process, and again, everyone's like, oh my goodness, I could get ripped off. That's probably the biggest thing everyone thinks. Oh no, if I send money to China, it'll disappear and never come. So how did you investigate that actual production process?
So key and so scary because Alibaba, like you hear people rave about that, but man, is that like a pyramid scheme? It's like the worst. I mean, you go there and like people are being like, yes, I have the, here's my manufacturing plant. But like, they're like seven middlemen between that person and the, it's unbelievable what's going on with there. So if people have had good experiences with Alibaba, like good for you. But like, I was just like, I give up. Like I'm never going to create a physical product. But I actually ended up going through this great company because he was a past guest of my show. So again, building relationships. His name's Richie Norton. He has a company called Prouduct, combining the word proud and product. So Prouduct. And so Prouduct.com is his website. And that's what they do. Like they have a team. That's, you know, a couple of them are based in China and they actually fly people over to China all the time. They speak Mandarin and they go out hoofs on the ground, you know, feet on the ground. And they are literally knocking on doors and like making relationships and building and actually vetting out the manufacturing plants and making sure everything's legit, that the workers, you know, are of age and everything looks good and great in there. So it was an amazing experience. They negotiated everything for me. Now I have like such a great relationship, like with this manufacturing plant, that they actually sent me a happy birthday video, which was like hysterical, or like the workers lined up and all saying happy birthday to me. And this was last year. Random side note, today's my birthday.
Oh, man. Happy birthday. Yeah.
I'm 37.
Oh, wow. I'm thrilled you're on the show.
Yay. There's no place I'd rather be on my birthday.
Of course.
And, you know, so they sent me a birthday video and it was, so I just felt like I had this relationship with them and it was so cool. It was great. And, you know, so I knew that when I went with the Mastery Journal that there was like, you know, there was no even second guessing where I was going. I mean, this was a proven commodity. So going through a company like Prouduct was really key and I loved it.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And then, of course, the next thing is, so they've been produced and you're happy and presumably they did like a test one and you signed it off and everything. Yeah. And then what I was having a look at how you're selling it. So first of all, you did a Kickstarter. So you had the pre-orders, but then you also have, it looks like Amazon Fulfillment. So you have warehousing and you're also using Shopify. So how are you doing that distribution and not, I mean, you're not sitting there in a warehouse shipping stuff. That is not your job.
So Thank goodness.
Yeah,
no.
I know. How are
Especially
you doing
I'm
that?
Doing a little, I'm doing a little birthday sale right now for the Freedom Journal today only. So, I mean, we're just doing a ton of sales. So luckily, like, you know, I'm not the person there having, or we wouldn't be able to talk right
around.
Now, but I'm here in Puerto Rico. It's happening. So I'll kind of maybe complete the dots right here. So after the 30,000 were printed in China, you know, they throw them on a boat and it's not that expensive to ship them over. It's not super cheap, but you know, we're talking 30,000 books. That's like over like 30 million pages of paper. It's insane. They would show me pictures of like the room. It was just like full of paper. Like it was crazy to look at like how much quantity 30,300 page journals are. It's crazy. It's amazing what they can do. And so they shipped over the 30,000. It cost about like $6,000 to do that shipment. Because again, you go on the slow boats or just like in a container. So it's pretty reasonable to ship 30,000 Freedom Journals is $6,000. So, you know, it's like you're basically paying a dollar, you know, not even close to that. You're paying like, you know, 20 cents per book to get it shipped over here, which is pretty amazing considering now that the books are in the United States to get them anywhere in the US, I'm paying like $7 to get one, you know, but I was paying 20 cents to get one from China to the US in that kind of bulk, of course. So it lands in the port of LA. And there's a distribution company called Shipwire, and that's who I use. So it's called Shipwire.com. They're the company that I use to hold all of the books. They kind of, you know, so I pay them as a warehouse and then as a pick and packer. So all of my books are there, every single one. And then when somebody orders, like there's actually an actual person that will go grab the book and you know, it goes through the process and gets shipped out. So it's an all automatic. It's a fully functioning 24/7 warehouse. That's pretty reasonable cost for all of that. I think it's like $2.25, you know, that I pay like that guy to go pick the book and put it on. So, you know, it's a pretty reasonable like pick and pack cost. And then, you know, it's like $5 per book for media mail because media mail is pretty reasonable, which is where you get to about like $7.25 to get a book to anywhere in the US. And then I also just, you know, signed up on Amazon FBA, so fulfillment by Amazon. And then whenever my inventories get low there, I'll literally just ship like 500 Freedom Journals from Shipwire to Amazon and they'll just, you know, Amazon will take them in, process them, and then they sell them. And that's how that works.
So Shipwire does your Shopify?
Yes. Connected through Shopify.
And also does... Right. And that's the sale through your website as well, goes to them. And then you have some with Amazon for Amazon Fulfillment. Okay. No, that works. And I mean, what's so crazy with this? And I mean, obviously the way you're doing it is you've got a low cost per book, and a high a high price, but
yes.
you know it, the profit margin on physical product, especially books, is pretty shocking compared to an online course. So, yeah. But you've done this again. Like if you'd have just done this once, I would have gone, yeah, okay. You know, that was just, you made some money, but hey, you know, it was a nightmare.
But it might not be worth it.
Yes, right. But you've done it again. So I guess now you're leveraging the knowledge, but you're now moving to traditional publishing. So does this make enough profit to bother with? Or, you know, are you looking now to kind of move into that traditional level because they are good at that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. So at my level right now, because I'm able to get the books printed, you know, for $6 per book. So it's not cheap to print one of these things. I mean, $6 is a lot of money to pay for, you know, a journal to be created. But the fact that I'm able to, you know, pay $6 and then, you know, add on the other costs, you know, which would be the 20 cents per book to ship it over to here, you know, add on, you know, maybe another 25 cents to actually get it into the warehouse, et cetera. You know, I'm at, you know, somewhere around $7 per book and I sell it for $39 per book. So that $32 is a net profit for me. On every single sale of a journal. So it's significant. You know, we typically do over $20,000 of net profit per month of Freedom Journal sales. So that's net profit.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. So it makes sense. You know, again, you know, we do $60,000 to $70,000 per month on sponsorships for EO Fire, which is frankly, you know, a lot less work, a lot, you know, it's all virtue, you know, there's none of this. So, you know, I get the arguments on both sides, but at the same time, just like, I also just love,
when I was going to say, like, you just love it.
Take pictures of the Mastery Journal and themselves. I love the fact that I am a believer that because it's physical and beautiful and people actually have to invest $39 to get this into their home, that they're going to actually have a much higher chance of succeeding because they've already made that commitment to themselves financially. Now it's time to follow through on that. So that is something, you know, that I feel like it works. You know, I'm proud of, you know, what it is and like the excitement that people get when it arrives. I just like all of that. So, so to me, that's cool. It just makes everything feel real.
Oh yeah. And that's the people listening. We all know that. That's why we do what we do. We're authors because we love that stuff. And then, so have you even bothered with physical bookstores across the US? Because, you know, presumably you could get distribution.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to still consider that at some point. I haven't gone down that road just because, you know, I just frankly have been focusing on other things because I will say when I went to do my initial research on journals, you know, I went to like the local Barnes and Noble and like bought all the journals that were there and they were just, you know, frankly crappy and they weren't high quality and they didn't really have any kind of a flow. You know, I'm just talking about the journals, like the actual leather, faux leather journals that were there. So I really feel like if the Freedom Journal was on a shelf at one of those stores that it would do really well. Because it would look beautiful compared to the other ones. It, you know, it's just everything, like you open it up, you know, the first thing we have is the top three reasons why you'll love the Freedom Journal, which to me will just draw people in. So that, is something that I might explore down the road. But again, you know, I just kind of haven't gotten around to it yet.
And what about print on demand? Because print on demand has got a lot better now and you can do hardback and you can do edging and you can do embossing. So is that something you'll consider down the line or will you keep doing?
I think I'm definitely going to do print on demand for my traditional book. What is your favorite right now of the print on demands?
It's interesting, you know, you were talking about standing out. I'm actually now moving into a more of a publishing company. So I'm working with Ingram and, you know, actually, because I think you're right. I think digital's pretty full. And if you have more physical product, more hardback and that type of thing, it's really interesting. So I'm developing stuff with Ingram and there's some interesting technology coming out. I'll have to email you next year when it's ready.
Yeah.
But where you can actually do this kind of print on demand, a bit like Shopify, but directly from your site directly to the printer. So it might even kind of help with that. But it was just
is
a question.
Is 3D printing having any kind of a play in that?
Well, I'm looking at doing some 3D printing with patterns and things with books, but more for fiction. But 3D printing is not really for books.
Books.
No, more like for products that would go with it. But anyway, just coming back to the publishing side. So you talked about doing iterations. You're a guy who likes control. You like creative stuff. How is this traditional publishing deal going to work when you're so used to being in control?
Yeah, I think it'll be a challenge. But, you know, that's one of those things where I do believe that all the magic happens outside of your comfort zone. Mm. And so, like, I've kind of been in my comfort zone with a lot of things. I make sure that with other things, I'm getting out of it. And this would be an example. Like, this would be getting me out of my comfort zone. I'd be trying new things. So I think it'll be a challenge. But I think at the same time, you know, that getting out of my comfort zone, being challenged and trying new things, and it'll just give me more stuff to talk about and do my JLD rants on.
Absolutely. Well, we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you about book marketing before we finish up, because I mean, all the listeners have books. We all have books, lots of them in some cases, and book marketing is probably the hardest part. So you sell through the podcast, and your podcast is not something, you know, well, it's something I recommend people listen to, but don't try it at home. Doing a daily show is hardcore. Like, you're so hardcore. But how has the podcast become the method of book sales, basically?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And someone that I point to a lot, who's a really good example, that is not like, didn't go the route that I went, but went a different route. You know, he was an author kind of first, Michael Port. You know, he wrote some great New York Times bestselling books, and he did this and he did that. And then, you know, like about a year ago, he actually, you know, shot me an email, and he was like, "Hey, I'm coming with this new book, Steal the Show. Like, what do you think I should do to market it?" And I'm like, "Well, how many chapters is the book?" He's like, "About 20. I'm like, "Well, let's do a 20 episode season called Steal the Show, and then launch the podcast. And every single episode one will be just a little summation of chapter one. And then same thing with chapter two and chapter three and episode four or five and so on and so forth." And he liked the idea. You know, he actually sat down in like 1 week and just like kind of scripted out and recorded out all 20 of the episodes, launched the season, and the podcast ended up doing so well that he just like called me up and he's like, "John, I gotta keep doing this. Like, what do I do?" He's like, "I don't want the season to end." I'm like, "No, end the season." Mm-hmm. And then after like a week, open up season two, and season two can be something else. And so I think that that's a great strategy for a lot of people, that, you know, we know that there's a lot of good traditional book marketing channels, but now what you want to do is do those that work. But now, how can you market your book in ways that not every other author is marketing their book as well? So you're not like screaming into like this room that's already full of people screaming, you know. And the podcast was a great way for, you know, for Michael Port to do that, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing that I was really impressed with that he did for book marketing. You know, something that I do is in the intros and outros of my podcast, I give calls to action for the Freedom Journal, for the Mastery Journal. I definitely do those things. You know, I actually sponsor other podcasts. So I, you know, pay Pat Flynn real money. Like, it's not cheap, like real money to be a sponsor of his podcast. So January 25th, February 1st, February 7th, and February 15th, you know, that those four episodes of his podcast, you know, while I'm launching the Mastery Journal, I've sponsored his episodes. And so like, that is going to be amazing. But what I love about that is it's going to actually be evergreen as well, because, you know, my call to action is go to themasteryjournal.com, which during those 33 days will take people to the Kickstarter campaign. But afterwards, it'll just take people to a webpage where they can just buy, you know, where they like the Freedom Journal webpage is now, they can just purchase the book through Shopify.
No, that's fantastic. And I think that evergreen marketing is a really good point, because most authors and most publishers make their money from the backlist, you know, stuff you might have done years ago, you're still making money on. So that is really so important. Okay. So just to finish up, just tell people what they can expect in the Mastery Journal. And also, you've said it once, but say it again, where can they get it, and what can they expect?
Well, no, thank you for the opportunity. It was great chatting today. And, you know, this is my passion project. It's the Mastery Journal. I mean, the Freedom Journal was definitely a passion project, but like, the Mastery Journal is a little different for me, because these are my three greatest strengths that I worked really hard to master. And so the Mastery Journal is a guide, a step-by-step guide that will teach you how to master productivity, how to master discipline, and how to master focus in 100 days. Because I believe in Parkinson's law, tasks will expand to the time allotted. So that's why we have 100 days for you to master these three skills. So, you know, real quick, productivity, like what are you producing of quality on a day-to-day basis? That's critical. So the Master General guides you on how to actually start producing quality work. And you actually self-evaluate yourself with a score every day on how you did. Same thing with discipline. You are forced, whether you want to or not, against your will, to develop a plan every single day and execute that plan so that you can be a disciple to yourself, to your business, to your life. You deserve it. The Master Journal will guide you there. And then, of course, focus. Follow One Course Until Success. It's my favorite acronym. I will teach you how to put those blinders on, how to drown out the weapons of mass distraction, and how to get stuff done. It's not easy to get stuff done in this world. Mm-hmm. The Mastery Journal will ensure that you do. And we're doing a Kickstarter campaign from January 23rd to February 24th of 2017. We've also, Joanna, partnered up with Pencils of Promise. And we did the same thing with Freedom Journal last year. I ended up writing a check for $75,000 to Pencils of Promise on behalf of the Freedom Journal supporters. We're continuing to do the same thing with the Mastery Journal. So if you give yourself the gift of mastering these three skills, you're also giving the gift of education to those less fortunate. And everything happens at themasteryjournal.com.
That's fantastic. And also just tell people where they can find your show and everything else you do online.
Yeah, we have a cool website, eofire.com. And what's cool is we have a ton of resources for entrepreneurs that are free. We love creating free courses. We have a free course on how to podcast, do webinars, funnels, how to accomplish goals, all for free on our eofire.com website.
That's fantastic. And just, you know, personally, you know, I really recommend your site to anyone who wants to know about podcasting because you're the man.
Thank you.
Oh, no worries. Right. Well, you have a lovely birthday and it was lovely to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time, John.
Thanks, Joanna. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with John, and definitely check out his podcast at eofire.com and the journal at themasteryjournal.com. So I'll be back next week with an interview with Stephen Pressfield on Use Your Own Life Story to Bring Depth to Your Writing. And yes, that's Stephen Pressfield who wrote The War of Art, Turning Pro, and other books you definitely should have on your bookshelf if you haven't already. Once again, I get fangirly because I love Stephen Pressfield, and I have a quote from him on my wall. I shall read it to you because why not? On the field of the self stand a knight and a dragon. You are the knight. Resistance is the dragon. The battle must be fought anew every day. Stephen Pressfield from The War of Art. So yes, tune in for the fangirly interview next week and have a happy creative week in the meantime. Bye for now. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.